Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. Hello, fellow gamer. Welcome to episode 162 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker, and on this show, we discuss the craft and the art of game mastering. I've been running RPGs for over 25 years now, and I produce this show in the hopes that you can benefit from my experience, my triumphs, and yes, my screw-ups. So many screw-ups. I want to welcome you today to Season 10 of Game Master's Journey. Holy cow, Season 10. I can't believe it. Episode 162, I can't believe it. This is a really exciting season for the show, and I'm really thrilled to be kicking it off today because we've got some awesome new features to Game Master's Journey, some supplements to the podcast, if you will. First of all, we now have monthly live streams. So at the first Wednesday of every month at, I believe, 3 p.m. Pacific time, I do an hour-long live stream on my YouTube channel, and you can go hang out with me live, hang out in the chat room. You can ask me questions. You can propose topics to discuss. And I'm working on figuring out a way to actually pull audience members into the actual live stream to be on camera with me. And when I get that figured out, and I will get that figured out, I promise you, any patrons who are in the audience will get first dibs to come on the show with me. So as I said, I do that live stream once a month on the first Wednesday of every month. Also, once a month, I produce a bonus episode of Game Master's Journey. So in addition to the regular weekly episodes of the show every month, there's a bonus episode. And I try to do something special with those episodes. This is a new thing, so we'll see how it goes. But both of these new features of the show, the monthly live stream and the monthly bonus episodes, are thanks to the support of the patrons of the show. These were milestones that I had set up on our Patreon page for Star Walker Studios, and we've hit them, and I'm really thrilled to do these things and to have more going on with the show. I'm really excited about it, and there are still more milestones planned, more episodes of the show, more live streams, more Game Master Journey goodness plan for the future. So thank you so much, patrons, for making all that possible. I have a great show for you today. Master cartographer extraordinaire Mike Schley is joining me on the show today, and we're going to have a nice little chat about maps and cartography and world building. And Mike's going to talk to us a bit about a Kickstarter that he's running now called Schleyscapes, which is an awesome resource for GMs out there for all different kinds of systems and worlds that you're using. It's an awesome resource. So we're going to talk about that, and we're going to have a good time. And I'm really excited to get Mike on here. So I think that is about it for the beginning of the show today. Sorry for the long pause there as I go through my notes and make sure that I've told you everything I want to tell you. Just a couple other quick announcements. I'm still running the Hidden Shrine of Tomawakan on my YouTube channel. We play that pretty much every Monday at 6 p.m. Pacific time. So you can check us out there. And yeah, lots of stuff going on my YouTube channel these days. I got the live stream for the show going on, got the actual play going on, and hopefully even more in the future. So stay tuned to Game Master's Journey and continue with us on the journey. So I think that is about it for my spiel here at the top of the show. So I want to get to this interview with Mike Schley, because this is fantastic stuff and he's got some really cool stuff to say. So without further ado, let's get on with the interview. Mike Schley is joining me on the show today. Mike Schley is a master cartographer extraordinaire of many products that you've probably seen out there, not the least of which being the many D&D 5th edition products that Mike has made maps for and illustrations for. So, Mike, I so much want to welcome you to the show today and thank you for joining us today. And I guess to kick off our conversation, I'll ask you, how did you first get into cartography and map making? And specifically, how did you get into making maps for tabletop RPGs?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in tabletop games and particularly D&D ever since I was a kid. But as far as actually working in that arena of the game industry, yeah, the thing that brought me in was working for Paizo. I got a job at Paizo back in 2004 and was immediately tasked to redesign both Dragon and Dungeon magazines with the help of Sarah Robinson.
Oh, wow.
This was back in 2004. Sean Glenn was the head art director, and he was sort of assigning that that design, that redesign and redevelopment to Sarah and I. She ended up sort of running the Dragon end, and I ended up being the associate AD for Dungeon. Which is kind of what got me into really thinking about maps and gameplay and how GMs interact with the resources that are built into the games that that they're running.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was a great job. I really enjoyed working with those guys over there. And this was before they started doing Pathfinder. They started working on Pathfinder after I left and started doing freelance work full time. Just kind of got tired of being a manager. I wanted to make all the art that I was assigning to other great artists.
Yeah, awesome. So were you doing your own cartography at that point?
Yeah, well, I had done cartography as a kid and, you know, just on the side. I've been trained as an artist, as a studio artist. I've been training or studying studio arts ever since I was a kid. I think my first formal art class was every Saturday for about 5 hours a day. My mom would take me to art lessons, you know, formal drawing lessons when I was like 8, 9 years old. I did that for a number of years until I went to high school, and I went to an arts high school, a governor's school for the arts, which is a magnet school in Virginia. And studied art there. I would go to my regular high school and, you know, study science and math and all that, you know, English and all that. And then from noon, I would go there, you know, 8 in the morning. And then from noon or 1 o'clock, I would go to the governor's school, which was at a local university with, I mean, they had like 200 or 300 students. But I would study nothing but art and art history until about five in the evening. And did that all through high school, and then went into college, studied studio arts as a BFA, Bachelor's of Fine Arts major, and spent all my time painting and drawing until I was about ready to graduate and started looking for a job, because it's hard to get a job straight out of the gate as, you know, quote unquote, an artist.
Right. Yeah, sure.
So I looked at illustration and design, and I'd been studying a lot of design. So I knew the fundamentals of page layout and, you know, the use of type and organizing space and, you know, making sure that projects were attractive yet readable and delivered to an audience in a way, you know, that's commercially viable. So when I left school, I immediately went to work for a company called Decipher, which was down the road from, you know, where I had been going to college. They created trading card games or collectible card games. They created trading card games for Star Wars, Star Trek, Lord of the Rings. At the time, they were just doing Star Wars and Star Trek and Austin Powers and How to Host a Murder Mystery, that kind of thing. And I came in with them as a designer who didn't know a whole lot, but had a good visual sensibility and was really, you know, was really good at drawing and painting. So I gave myself a crash course in Photoshop and design, because this was back in 2000, and started designing their point of purchase, you know, boxes and card layouts and game elements. And I worked for them for a while. We did the Lord of the Rings trading card game, which I won a, well, the art group, my group, won an Origins Award for in 2002. but it was for the Lord of the Rings trading card game. We won a Best Design Award, which actually that ended up getting me my job at Paizo, because Sean Glenn, the art director that I eventually ended up working under, was nominated for the same award. And when he lost it, or not when he lost it, but when our group won it, he made a note and he remembered that. It kind of stuck under his skin. But when I was chatting with him over email, like, I think that was the thing that finally pushed him to go ahead and hire me. and led me into RPGs in a direct way. Decipher had published RPGs, or an RPG series for Lord of the Rings, which actually kind of led me into really falling in love again with maps. Like, when I was a kid, I always loved maps, and I collect all the fold-out inserts from National Geographic, and, you know, as well as the old gazetteers from D&D, and you know, any kind of fantasy map that I could get a hold of, get my hands on, was up on my wall. But when I was working for Decipher and they were working on the Lord of the Rings role-playing game, we would get these beautiful maps in, and I would just pore over them back in the room where we, you know, would do film editing. I would just sit back there on the light table and look at these maps. And then when I was working for Paizo, you know, I fell in love with maps again, you know, working with guys like Robert Lazzaretti, Chris West, and, you know, a lot of the folks that were making maps for us at the time. And I would have almost as much fun, you know, staring at them and, you know, getting lost in them as, you know, I'm sure they'd have making them. And one thing led to another. And one month, I ended up not having someone to work on a project. One of the reasons why I actually got into map making at the time was that my stable of good cartographers was really, really small. I mean, there were a lot of folks that make maps, but a lot of the illustrators that I was working with for the artwork ends of the magazine, you know, they were much more interested in, you know, making, doing character portraits or scenes or, you know, things with a lot of action.
Okay.
So there weren't as many cartographers, which led, you know, me 1 month to have to do my own map making for one of the adventures. And I just fell in love with it all over again, and realized that WotC needed map makers, because they were having the same problem I was. And next thing you know, I'm doing maps full time for D&D, because, you know, I was doing it on the side. And my wife finally came to me and was like, "Look, you're spending way too much time working. You need to choose one or the other." And as a result, you know, I had a sort of a come to Jesus moment where I said, "Yeah, I enjoy making the artwork much more than I enjoy managing other artists." Not that I have anything against other artists or art directors. It's just I really love making art. I mean, that's the thing that I feel like I was born to do. And luckily, I've been able to find a way to do that successfully over the last 20 years of professional work. Actually, it's been more than 20 years. When I was in college, my first job as an artist was working as a studio assistant to a medical illustrator who has since gone on to his own arts career outside of illustration. But I kind of got I dove into the deep end in that. Like, immediately after I was hired for that job, which was in my early 20s, I was doing drawings for court cases and for medical instruction booklets and books. That was even though it was illustration, it was a far cry from the kind of work that I do now, but it gave me a great understanding of how to operate as a storyteller and as a visual artist in a real way, as opposed to, you know, just going to school and hoping that someday you'll land a job as an artist.
Yeah.
So, if that all makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I'm rambling too much.
No, that's fine. So that's interesting. So you came at this definitely from the art side. And it sounds like you were playing RPGs all along, or for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember breaking open the Red Box with a buddy of mine when we were in middle school, or earlier than that, when I was in elementary school. They were very rudimentary games. I mean, we were little kids, so we didn't know half of what, you know, what we were doing half the time.
Yeah.
But I loved the maps, and, you know, I loved the process of exploring new spaces. So the thing that I remember the most was that process of, you know, having a piece of grid paper out in front of me, and my buddy who was playing the GM, it was just the two of us, he was playing the GM, and I was exploring this this world, or this rudimentary map that he had made and the creatures that he had populated it with. And so that process of two people interacting over a world that not only had the GM built, but that I was actively developing by my own actions, that's always stuck with me as something incredibly fascinating, how you can have this mutually subjective experience turn into something that's more than the sum of its parts. So you've got all these people kind of huddled around a dining room table, maybe eating dinner or having drinks, or basically combining or joining in to tell a story whose end goal, or whose the direction, isn't necessarily cut in stone, right? So the GM has a general idea of the narrative that they want to build towards. They have a plot, they have plot devices, and they have a flow, and they have an overall sense of the direction that the campaign's going in. But it's really the combination of that structure combined with the player's subjective influence that allows the story to be told in a much more active, sort of freeform way. And that that mutual creation, or that joint creation, has always been something that I've been really, really fascinated with. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I can definitely see a very clear trajectory of how you got into this, and making all these great maps for the games we play.
Nice, thanks. That's the one thing that I really enjoy the most, is not only creating worlds that I find fascinating, and by that, you know, a lot of the times I'm exploring the map as I'm drawing it, as I'm developing it. But also just the idea that the artwork that I make can spark new stories or new storytelling and new adventures on its own by the GM or the players developing it in ways that I didn't expect, you know? So, you know, if one little detail, and I tend to make very detail rich maps, even though I try and keep them visually from becoming too cluttered, I still try and give as many visual seeds for the GM to riff off of and the players to investigate as possible. So the idea, like the fact that with all the artwork that comes with a role-playing game, or, you know, that's provided in a campaign from the GM, all of the illustration, you know, I love making artwork and I love illustrating, but a lot of times those little like character illustrations or monsters or scenes, those you really only see for a couple of seconds at a time when, you know, flash a card up and say, this is what you see when you come around the corner.
Yeah.
But when you've got a really, really gorgeous map out on the table, and it's there for the better portion of a session or a couple of sessions, or maybe it's a world map that's on the wall that's referred to over the course of a campaign, those are things that have the ability to really influence the entirety of that experience. So the fact that somebody may be poring over my map for hours at a time, literally, that compels me to do as good a job as I possibly can and to really give them something that rewards that kind of investigation. So, you know, I may include little details that only 1% or, you know, a very small number of people might see. But when they see that or when they find those little things, I want that payoff, or I want there to be something there that they can really get excited about.
Yeah, that's really cool. I never really thought about it that way. But you're totally right. We spend way more time looking at a map than we would, like you said, like a picture of a monster or something. Mm-hmm. It's a really good point.
Yeah, not that I have anything against great pictures of monsters. I've got a couple of them I've got a spider bear that I'm really having fun with in Schweinsgates right now.
Yeah.
And in as that series progresses, there's going to be a lot more character and monster illustrations and scenes, like cutaway views, that kind of thing. But I still feel like the crux of what I do is always going to be building these worlds. Like, it's all really going to center around the map in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Even if I was doing a graphic novel, which is a project that I have kind of tied into Schleyscapes down the road, I don't want to talk about that too much. It's still in the works, but that's still going to incorporate this world as well as, you know, playable, utilizable maps in conjunction with the graphic novel. But that's further down the road.
Yeah, well, I definitely know what you're talking about, because I remember reading like the Lord of the Rings books or like The Wheel of Time, and always flipping back to the map in the beginning of the book and kind of seeing where the heroes are going. And, you know, those weren't even like anything on the level of like, well, I guess The Wheel of Time, they have a nice full color map in the cover.
Yeah.
But a lot of times in those fantasy novels, they're just black and white, you know, line art maps. They're not super detailed. So nothing like what we're used to in D&D or like the maps you make. But it definitely makes you want to learn more about the world and, oh, what's over there and what's on top of that mountain. And
yeah,
they're very inspiring, I guess, is the word.
I actually had the good fortune over the last few years to do a series of interior maps for Garth Nix's Old Kingdom series.
Oh, cool.
He's a fantasy author. The first one I did was for Clariel, which is part of the series, and then Golden Hand a little bit later. But and I've done a whole lot of interior maps for like HarperCollins, Scholastic, Little Brown and Company in fantasy novels that harken back to the golden era of interior of book illustration, essentially, but take that format of an interior map, because all the fantasy books that I read as a kid, they always had maps in them. Sometimes, you know, some were better than others, but I still loved being able to refer to that world as I'm reading the story. You always want to sort of check back in with the map and to see where the story's leading, especially with like the in a world that's more difficult to visualize. Like I worked on Veronica Roth wrote a book series that started off with Divergent, and it's sort of a post-apocalyptic science fiction novel set in the U.S. after great devastation. But anyways, in that novel, there was they needed a cutaway view of of a compound. The novel was called Divergent. I think they made a movie out of it a couple of years back.
Yeah.
With a sequel. Right. So the main compound in that was built underneath the ruins of Chicago, of downtown Chicago, and as well as into some of the buildings. And they needed a cutaway, essentially an illustrated cutaway map of that space, which would have been ridiculous to try and map out, you know, in a traditional kind of top-down way. So that allowed me to sort of combine my understanding of cartography with illustration, which has led to, well, that's kind of been in conjunction. I've been working on cutaway views and illustrated maps in conjunction with my regular top-down maps, which is a lot of fun, but a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah, I'm sure. So in kind of broad strokes, can you kind of walk us through like your creative process of how you create a map from the moment where you're like, I need a map of something to, you know, how you get from there to like a map we would see in like a D&D product?
Yeah, sure. So if I'm working with a client, like if I'm working with Wizards of the Coast or, you know, a book publisher or a game publisher, I typically get details or art order from the art director that gives me a general outline. Like I usually try and prompt the author or the designers of the game to give me as much text content or as much of the feel of the story and details of the location or the world as possible. So if they've got like a world guide or you know, like an art style guide, I try and get a hold of that just so that I can get a sense of the flavor of the world. And the thing about D&D is that I spend a lot of time thinking about the overall design and how the maps and the artwork that I make create a tone for that world, for, you know, the Forgotten Realms. And as a result, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, the design of my compass roses and, you know, everything from like the border treatments to, you know, the housing architecture or, you know, does Menzo feel like it's in the Underdark? So I'll figure all that out first. And then I usually do a lot of sketching on paper just to start, just to work things out in my head, which, by the way, I think the most difficult map I've drawn was the map of, the city underneath Waterdeep, Skullport. I don't know if you're familiar with that image, but imagine an isometric or an at-angle illustrated map of a city on three levels inside of a cavern.
Oh man.
just technically that was a tough one. But I thought it came out pretty well.
Great perspective exercise, right?
Yeah. yeah, no doubt. Pulling my hair out. And I'm freehanding the whole thing other than like so for my isometric maps, typically, if I have a top-down view of like a city, for instance, you know, all the buildings have footprints and I'm able to basically take that flat plane, bring it into Photoshop, create a perspective grid, and then just freehand the whole thing over top of that footprint that I've got that's essentially the buildings laid out. But if I'm doing a traditional top-down map, I'll do the sketches. I lay out my grid, honestly, from the get-go because I want the artwork and the walls and everything to line up to that grid perfectly so that, you know, I don't have any kind of weird, you know, screwed up hallways that are too narrow or off in alignment. And I've just got that grid layer kind of at a very reduced level so that it's not visually cluttering, but I can use it as a guideline. And then I go in and lay in my pencils this kind of gets sort of technical. You sort of need to know Photoshop, but I'll lay in sort of a overlay of my sketch, just so I can sort of see where everything's laid out. And then I go in and ink the whole thing just by hand, typically. And then once the ink layer is done and I've sort of explored the space and created it as I'm drawing it, I'll send those inks in for review, you know, with my art director. And typically if there's text, I'll add text at that point, send it out, for review, get any notes back. And if it's good to go, I'll, lay in my colors. And that's, I work at a, I've got a 30-inch iMac or a 30-inch Apple monitor and a Wacom and just a little Mac Mini, which does the trick. Just draw it on my draw in the colors like I was using watercolor effects brushes in Photoshop. And so it's very similar to my traditional ink and wash work that I, you know, did years ago on, you know, paper or on watercolor paper, except that it's in a digital format. And as a result, I can make changes super quick and it really expedites the process. So it's a nice merging of traditional and digital techniques. And I guess I picked up the traditional techniques through my training as a studio artist and as a fine artist. And I picked up the digital techniques and the design understanding, you know, working for companies like Decipher and Paizo and being an illustrator, as it were. So having those experiences and also having experiences as a true designer and true art director, as well as an artist, all those things sort of merged into me being able to not only create artwork that I find compelling, but to be able to deal with art directors pretty easily, because I know I know how hard that job is and I know what they look for and how to keep them happy.
Yeah.
So, sure. As a result, it's worked out really well. And I have a lot of great relationships with a lot of really wonderful art directors and companies out there.
So just for anyone listening who maybe doesn't know, what are some of the recent RPG products that you've worked on?
Okay, so let's see if I can remember them all. I've literally lost track of how many pieces of artwork have been published in the last 20 years. Like, I think I'm somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000.
Wow.
But the most recent books have been for Dungeons & Dragons. Fifth edition. The most recent one that came out was Tales from the Yawning Portal. Before that, let's see, the Storm King's Thunder had pieces that I had done previously that were sort of repurposed for that book.
Okay.
And that included a massive map of the northwest section of Faerun that I created for the Sword Coast's Adventurer's Guide. Which was huge, and I can go into detail about working on that monster after this. That was a lot of fun, but a lot of work. The project I did before that was Princes of the Apocalypse. Then before that was the D&D 5th edition starter set, the Lost Mines of Phandelver. And then before that, I worked on the DMG. I did a bunch of cutaway illustration and scene illustration for the Dungeon Master's Guide. Not all of which went into it, but there was still a lot of work that I produced for it.
So basically, if you've been playing D&D, you've seen your stuff, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, pretty much. And I could probably go on for another hour just recounting all the books I've worked on for D&D. Besides D&D, I've also worked on mobile games. There's a series called Sorcery for the Apple iPhones and iPads, and it's in the Android market. That was based on an author named Steve Jackson, not Steve Jackson Games, but a different author named Steve Jackson, who had a series of choose your own adventure books, which I actually played back in the 80s, or loved reading back in the 80s. And Inkle Games turned that into an interactive, much more in-depth storytelling experience on mobile devices that are just a ton of fun and really capture that sense of fantasy, your decisions really affecting the story in fundamental ways type of game. And I did a ton of maps for them and cutaway views for encounter locations, end up doing a 3D map that was a whole lot of fun, but another ball of wax. So yeah, I've been busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It might have been easier to ask what D&D products didn't you work on? That might have been the easier way to approach that.
Yeah, I think there were a number that Jared Blando worked on that I haven't had a chance to work on. That. Like the Rise of Tiamat series, I didn't have much in, but that was a few years ago.
Yeah.
There's another, and Well, there's a book coming out. There's a new adventure coming out this fall. And I don't know how much I can talk about it, but I know that they've already mentioned it, the Tomb of Annihilation.
Yes.
And apparently at Origins last week, it came out that I did all the maps for that. So, there you go. And there's a ton. I won't go into it anymore, but there's a lot of great maps in that book. So if you like maps and you like my work, take a look.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm currently running the Hidden Shrine of Tomahawken on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you were kind enough to let me use your high-res maps for Roll20 on that. So if you check that out, you can see some of your maps in like high definition.
Nice. That's one of the most rewarding things in the last few years is seeing folks. There's been a number of GMs and players and fans that have shared photos of their game rooms with, you know, my maps printed out, either displayed on their walls or on the table during game sessions. And just the outpouring of appreciation from the community has been absolutely wonderful. That's what keeps me doing, you know, what I do in a lot of ways. Because, you know, the gaming industry and the gaming community more broadly are just really some of the most wonderful fans and most supportive audience members that I could imagine. I mean, that's what's kept me in that industry, or in this industry, in this field for so long, is just how great the fans are.
And one can actually get a lot of, if not all of, your maps on your website in digital and physical versions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got high-res versions for download, and I've got physical print versions for sale as well. Those are at prints.mikeschley.com, or if you just go to mikeschley.com, there's a little shop button there, and you can find everything that's there. Plus, there's a link to the new Schleyscapes Kickstarter that's out right now. It's doing really well. This is Mike Schley, and you're listening to Game Master's Journey.
I want to take a minute to give a quick shout out to the patrons of Starwalker Studios. The support of the patrons makes this show possible. If you enjoy Game Master's Journey and you'd like to give a little back, becoming a patron is a great way to do so. It's because of the patrons that all the listeners of Game Master's Journey enjoy a bonus episode every month, as well as the Game Master's Journey live stream. I would also like to give a huge shout out and thank you to my tier 5 patron, Mr. Steve Strickland. Let's hear it for Steve. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Steve,
you're the man.
Thank you so much, Steve, and thank you to all the patrons. You can find out more about becoming a patron by clicking on the Patreon button at the top of the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. You know, a big focus of this show is world building. So yeah, I'd really like to talk about your Schleyscapes. So
yeah,
tell us all about it.
Okay. So thank you. So one of the things that I've really been chomping at the bit to get to do is to basically build my own sort of storytelling world that can be imported into pretty much any role-playing game campaign or any fantasy RPG campaign. And I finally had the chance, or at least the opportunity, to really focus on it and get it out the door, get it off the ground. So in Schleyscapes, what I'm creating, and it's really a digital project, even though I do offer vinyl battle maps, but in a single PDF, I want it, well, a PDF and associated JPEG files. What I want to do is provide great maps, art, and story seeds about a single encounter in each episode so that you can either use those resources from that single episode in your homebrew and, you know, modify them and print them and play with them as long as you like. Just don't use them commercially or redistribute them. But I want you to be able to have access to great visual and storytelling resources that can be easily ported into your game, whether you're printing them out for tabletop use or whether you're using the digital files for BTTs. So in a single PDF, for instance, you get the full poster map of the location that you can print through a large format printer, or if you, you know, take it to a print shop, you can print it out for a print shop. And you have my permission to do that. There's a verbiage in the PDF that lets you do that. So in addition to that large version, along with a bunch of little discoverable areas that are set to the side in, or you can print them set to the side, but you can also print them out as what I'm calling discovery tiles. So in addition to the large print version, the entire map is cut into 9 separate letter-sized tiles or letter-sized pages. They're all tiled out so that they're 8 5-foot squares wide by 10 5-foot squares tall. So in 9 sections, you can lay out the entire map, either in full color or a super ink-efficient black and white line version. And then on top of that, there are areas that you can open up and discover so that when your players, you know, check out what looks like a little hole or a little burrow entrance, when they go down into that, when they, you know, say, all right, I want to hop down into that burrow entrance, there's an additional, additional 3x5 tile that you can lay down on top of that, that opens that area up and shows what's underneath it. Same thing for the cottage, for instance. When you walk into the kitchen, there's a separate tile you can lay down, and just, you know, if you put a little piece of poster tack on the back, it'll hold it in place. But you can lay down that tile, and it's essentially an easy, attractive fog of war mechanic. Same thing goes for secret rooms. You know, when you make your check to see if you've discovered a secret door, when that opens up, you should be able to easily display that in a quick way on the table. So on top of that, in the BTT files, I've included each of the separate areas as separate maps so that you can display them, you know, as you like. And like if you're using Fantasy Grounds and you want to use their fog of war mechanic, then they're easily and quickly and portable and usable. So they come in 300 DPI or PPI versions, 100 PPI and 50 PPI versions. So that they're, you know, no sweat to use over a decent internet connection.
Yeah, that's really awesome, because especially your discovery tiles and how you've basically come up with a product where if we're running like more traditionally around a table with physical maps, we can, like you said, have like basically fog of war, which is really easy to do with something like Roll20 or Fantasy Grounds. But when you have like this big, huge map on the table, it's a lot more difficult to hide parts of it, you know? So it's a really cool way how you kind of solve that problem.
And one of the big things that I was thinking about also was how to show a map and not automatically give away the fact that there are discoverable areas on the map. Yeah. You know, because like if you've got a map laid out and, you know, you've got big chunks of paper over top of it already, or if you've got a big towel over an area, that's a pretty good giveaway. That's where you want to go.
Yeah.
But with the discovery tiles, essentially, you can lay out the map. And then once you can let the storytelling sort of guide their exploration through the space, as opposed to clunky mechanics that might give away too much at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time thinking about the actual design of the map artwork, but I've also included illustrations and story seeds that are directly related to this overarching world that I'm building the maps into. It's the world of Fernway. Basically, Fernway means wanderlust in German. There's a whole setting that each of the episodes are going to be sort of building out. So with each episode, they can be standalone adventures or standalone encounters, but as the series progresses, they're going to progress in a way similar to a campaign, so that even though they're system independent, they can be followed, whether you know you're playing with 3.5 mechanics in Pathfinder, or whether you're playing fifth edition D&D, or whether you're playing old school D&D. The idea is that you should have artwork and maps and stories that you can either import into your game, into your own homebrew, or build a campaign out of as the series moves on. And honestly, if I can keep working on the series and working on this world, this is a lifetime project for me. So Schleyscapes building into this other project that I have that's more narrative based, but still includes maps and, visual art. That's what I'm focused. Hey, but don't worry, I'm still making D&D maps. I'm still making artwork for Dungeons and Dragons. This isn't me, thumbing my nose at anybody. It's just me working on something that that I can really fall in love with and push forward as a personal project.
Well, I think you're preaching to the choir here, because many of the listeners of this show are world builders on their free time. So. I don't think you have to explain yourself. So can you tell us more about your world of Fernway, kind of what it's like?
Yeah, I'm the first thing that I was thinking about was that I honestly want the world to act as a reflection of our own world. So a lot of, there's going to be a lot of thought put into politics or emotional responses to changes when worlds are turned upside down in a lot of ways. So to avoid giving away too much at the beginning of the series, I'm talking about so in this world, there's a moon that's essentially geostationarily locked, and it's called the Tane. And the Tane is a old word that references a mirror, or a sort of a duality or a reflection of oneself. So the Tane in the sky, imagine a gigantic moon that's always there, that is never not, it's never been out of view. So all of these folks that are in Fernway have this thing to relate to, that if you're navigating the world, like, you wouldn't need necessarily a compass or anything on a cloudless day or a cloudless night, because you'd always have the moon to refer back to. You'd always have a point of reference, right?
Cool.
So imagine a world where in that system, the point of reference, which for as far back as anyone can ever remember, has always been stable. What if that point of reference, what if that moon suddenly moved? And it may not have to move a lot, but just enough that it would be like the rug being pulled out from under you,
Yeah.
And that sort of acts as the harbinger for all of these changes in this world, where essentially it's a low fantasy world turning into a high fantasy world, whether they like it or not.
Cool.
And how the people in that world and how that world's affected by that change or by these changes is what I'm exploring and what I want to kind of propel the story. That's sort of the skinny of the beginning.
Very cool. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
I think any good world, needs some kind of like cool concept or idea that's at the heart of it, or at least is like kind of the launching point. And and that's really cool. And I think I can kind of, maybe I'm projecting here, but I can kind of see how this world was developed by a cartographer, this whole idea of of this moon that everybody references. That's great. Yeah.
And in that, in addition to that, I really want to spend time thinking about how we navigate the world and how we sort of come like our sense of self and our sense of presence, you know, is formed in a lot of ways by how we see our relationship to the greater world around us. So if there's something that really upsets that ball of, you know, upsets that horse and cart, how that can affect our change, you know, our own personalities, or the way that we respond to the world around us. In the broader sense, you know, people's true characters really come out in moments of crisis. And so, you know, in this world, like, because so much of what's going on is tied in with this reorientation or this sense of dislocation, something is going on behind the scenes. And as a result, you know, all the cartographers and explorers that have been actively, you know, that understand the world have been disappearing for some reason. And it's not that they're just disappearing when they're out, you know, at the far edges of the world. They're disappearing from their own beds and disappearing from, you know, places in town where you would think that they would be nice and safe. So I'll kind of tease that out as the story progresses, and tease out what's causing these changes, because they're much bigger than just the moon moving. But the moon moving is, in a sense, a harbinger or a symbol, albeit a big visual symbol, that there's something going on under the surface. So yeah, I don't want to give away too much more, but that's the general lead off.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
I'm excited to see where this goes.
Thank you. So far, the Kickstarter's done, you know, great. And I've got the time and resources to really push this forward. So, you know, when it really gets in full swing, I would love to be able to produce, you know, a full episode a month or every 2 months, so that you could follow it like a a episodic narrative story. Right now, it's probably going to be a few months between episodes, just because on top of all this, I've decided to go back to graduate school and finish my MFA because I'm insane and apparently didn't have enough work to do already.
There you go.
But so I'll be balancing all of that and making the best maps and best artwork that I can, and trying to tell the best stories that I can over the next couple of years. And then once this other project that's more narratively driven is ready to launch, I'll announce that and keep the two sort of moving forward. Because Schleyscapes is, even though it's narratively driven, it's really more about providing resources in a campaign setting for gamers. Whereas the other project that's in the same world, albeit maybe at a different time in the world, that's more of a graphic novels format that has artwork that can also be incorporated into the game. So imagine reading a graphic novel, and every issue of the graphic novel, the setting that your, you know, protagonists are that they find themselves in also comes with a great map and awesome resources that you could work in your own campaign.
Awesome. That sounds great.
So, yeah, thanks. I got my work cut out for me.
Yeah, I'm really curious as you're developing this world that you're creating, where, like how is the map making coming into it? Like, how early in the process were you sketching out maps, and like, what Do you come up with the map first and then you fill it with ideas, or do you come up with ideas and then make a map? Like, how does that work?
I don't know. Like, if you look at my sketchbooks, it's all over the place.
Okay. Kind of back and forth.
yeah, it really is. In a lot of ways, I let the maps inform the story, and in a lot of ways, I let the story inform the maps, just because they're so intricately enmeshed, in the storytelling. I would have a hard time, like, and a lot of times, like, when I said that I'm exploring the map as I draw it, I mean, that's very literally true. So okay. I often think about storytelling, you know, once I've drawn a map, because that I try and put in details, not only for myself, but for other, for my audience or for GMs, I try and put in details that spark that, that storytelling capacity. So a lot of times I'll develop my story off my map, but at the same time, you know, I love, you know, just writing compelling short fiction. And that often requires, you know, mapping from a more sort of assignment driven kind of framework. Yeah. More like a traditional game company, where essentially you have writers and editors, like, you know, at Paizo, we would have writers and editors building the, folks building the adventure scenario. And then we would need to assign maps that could elucidate or flesh out that story. Sometimes that's how, you know, it works in my own head. Okay. Other times I'm just drawing maps and making stories out of them as the maps kind of unfold, or as this visual arc of a world unfolds.
Cool.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a feeling it was probably something like that.
But... Yeah. And I've got tons and tons of sketchbooks that are just notes of me going back and forth, you know, hashing out ideas by drawing things out or writing things out first. And I mean, they're a mess, but it's a lot of compelling resources to then sort of formalize into a cohesive whole. So,
yeah, well, I will definitely put links to the Schleyscapes Kickstarter in the show notes, as well as to your website, where people can check out all your maps and everything.
One more thing I wanted to mention was I put together a fun little Instagram explorable game.
Right.
Have you checked out the Schleyscapes episode one preview Instagram page?
Yes, I did. I needed help from you on it, but I finally got in there.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm still working the kinks out of it, but the format seems like it would be perfect. Just the Instagram grid format, and the ability to link to other profiles, essentially utilizing that format as a way to explore a map and to, embed other artists into the map, or be able to move from one map to another just by clicking on profile links, so that, you know, you can start with one area and explore, kind of like exploring discovery tiles just through that Instagram interface. That was a heck of a lot of fun to make. And it was super quick after I had the artwork already, you know, worked out for Schleyscapes. I was like, hey, why don't I put together a preview trailer that could be like an explorable movie trailer, just in that Instagram format. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, thank you for reminding me of that. I will link to that too, so people can go check that out, because it's a great preview of what the Schleyscapes is going to be.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, was there anything else you wanted to talk about or let people know about?
Just keep exploring and tell great stories. I mean, that's pretty much it. I'm really committed to making things that sort of push the boundaries of what's capable at your table, or what you can do with the games in front of you. And if the work that I do provides great stories that gaming groups can tell years down the road, then, you know, I couldn't be happier. So, yeah, I'll keep making maps as long as there's folks that still keep playing RPGs.
Awesome. And can people find you on Twitter or anywhere else?
Yeah. I'm on Twitter at Schley. That's at Schley. I'm on Google Plus, Mike Schley. I'm on Facebook, Mike Schley Illustration and Design, Instagram, Schleyscapes or Mike Schley. And I've got a Tumblr site, for folks that are interested in cartography or art or me just rambling on. If you go to, Schley Tutorials, over at Tumblr, then that's my page too. And I give, tips, tricks, and, you know, lots of useless information too, I'm sure, but, some good stuff over there.
Awesome. Well, I've got to check that out.
Yeah.
I'm wanting to do some mapping with zero talent. So I'm sure you can, you can help me.
Oh, there's another great tutorial site. It's called Fantasy Maps. John, basically, I think I linked to it on Twitter a lot and on my Facebook page. But yeah, there's a lot of great. I got to put a plug in for Cartographers Guild. If you're interested in mapping, and this is in no way a paid plug, it's just one of my favorite sites on the web. Cartographers Guild is a great location to see other artists' map work, or to get feedback on your own cartography, or just shoot the shit with other folks that really, really dig great maps. So go check them out.
Yeah, I've been all over Cartographers Guild. I love that site.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us, Mike. Really appreciate it.
This was a whole lot of fun. I hope I didn't ramble on too much.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's super enjoyable.
I just have one other question for you that I forgot to ask you, and that is, where in the world are you?
Where? I'm actually in Philadelphia.
Okay.
I live out on the East Coast. I've been here for about 4 years. My wife and I moved out here when she went to graduate school, and there's so much history and so much to do and see out here in the birthplace of America.
Yeah.
I've really been enjoying it. It's a great spot.
Wow. So we're coast to coast right now.
Yeah, pretty much. That's it.
Wow. Awesome.
Although I did live in Seattle for a while, and I've bounced all over the U.S. I've lived in Seattle, Arizona, North Carolina, Florida, Virginia.
Wow.
Pretty much every corner. Well, just about every corner.
Nice.
And I think it's that wanderlust, you know, it's Fernway coming out in me. every 5 years or so, I get this itch to move to someplace I've never seen before.
Awesome. Well, you are welcome back anytime you want to come and talk about maps and art and all that good stuff.
Oh, thank you, Lex. I'd be more than happy to come back. You're a great host.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure I could pick your brain for hours.
Oh, that'd be a lot of fun.
Well, that is going to wrap it up for episode 162 of Game Master's Journey. If you'd like to get a hold of me, please visit the website starwalkerstudios.com. There you can email me, find my Twitter, Google+, Facebook, Pinterest, and YouTube information, and the Game Master's Journey voicemail number where you can call and leave me a message. If your feedback or question is entertaining or enlightening, or both, You might even hear your message on the show. If you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions for future topics, I would love to hear from you. Also, at the website, you can find a link to the Game Master's Journey community, where you can share ideas with other listener GMs. Finally, you can learn about how you can support the show by becoming a patron, by making a one-time donation, by using my Amazon referral link when you shop on Amazon, or by purchasing my D&D adventure, The Trickster's Labyrinth. I want to thank Mike Schley again for joining us on the show today. I hope you enjoyed our discussion as much as I did. You can find links to the resources Mike and I talked about today in the show notes for this episode over at starwalkerstudios.com. And you can also find among those links, links to his map making tutorials, the Schleyscapes Kickstarter, which you should definitely check out. It's going strong. It's already funded. By the time you hear this, there's probably going to be a little over a week left on that Kickstarter. So time is definitely running out, and you definitely want to go check that out. It's really good stuff. And also, you can find a link to the interactive trailer for Schleyscapes on Instagram that we talked about in the interview today. You can also find Mike's contact information if you'd like to keep up on his future products or projects or both. You can find all this and more at starwalkerstudios.com. I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I hope you have a chance to run your favorite RPG. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music, courtesy of Cloudwalker, Transboy, Renfield, Stanko, and Ish. See the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.